Practical Vipassana Meditational Exercises. The following is a talk by the Venerable Mahasi Sayadaw, given to his disciples on their induction into Vipassana meditation at Tathana Yekta Meditation Center, Rangoon, Burma. The practice of Vipassana, or insight meditation, is the effort made by the meditator to understand correctly the nature of the psychophysical phenomena taking place in his or her own body. Physical phenomena are the things or objects which one clearly perceives around one. The whole of one's body that one clearly perceives constitutes a group of material qualities called rupa. The mind or mental phenomena are acts of consciousness or awareness called nama. These nama rupas, or mind and body phenomenon, are clearly perceived to be happening whenever they are seen, heard, smelt, tasted, touched, or thought. We must make ourselves aware of them by observing them and noting them. In such case, seeing. When we hear something, hearing. When smelling. When something is tasted, tasting. When we touch something, touching. Or thinking. Every time one sees, hears, smells, tastes, touches, or thinks, one should make a note of the fact. But in the beginning of one's practice, one cannot make a note of every one of these happenings. One should, therefore, begin with noting those happenings which are conspicuous and easily perceivable. With every act of breathing, the abdomen rises and falls, which movement is always evident. This is the material quality known as vayodhatu, or the element of motion. One should begin by noting this movement, which may be done by the mind intently observing the abdomen. You will find the abdomen rising when you breathe in and falling when you breathe out. The rising should be noted mentally as rising and the falling as falling. If the movement is not evident by just noting it mentally, keep touching the abdomen with the palm of your hand. Do not alter the manner of your breathing, neither slow it down nor make it faster. Do not breathe too vigorously either. You will tire if you change the manner of your breathing. Breathe steadily as usual and note the rising and falling of the abdomen as they occur. Note it mentally and not verbally. In Vipassana meditation, what you name or say doesn't matter. What really matters is to know or perceive. While noting the rising of the abdomen, do so from the beginning to the end of the movement, just as if you are seeing it with your eyes. Do the same with the falling movement. Note the rising movement in such a way that your awareness of it is concurrent with the movement itself. The movement and the mental awareness of it should coincide in the same way as a stone thrown hits the target. Similarly with the falling movement. Your mind may wander elsewhere while you are noting the abdominal movement. This must also be noted by mentally saying, wandering. When this has been noted once or twice, the mind stops wandering, in which case you go back to noting the rising and falling of the abdomen. If the mind reaches somewhere, note as reaching. Then go back to the rising and falling of the abdomen. If you imagine meeting somebody, notice meeting. Then back to the rising and falling. If you imagine meeting and talking to somebody, notice talking. In short, whatever thought or reflection occurs should be noted. If you imagine, notice imagining. If you think, thinking. If you plan, planning. If you perceive, perceiving. If you reflect, reflecting. If you feel happy, notice happy. If you feel bored, bored. If you feel glad, glad. If you feel disheartened, notice disheartened. Noting all these acts of consciousness is called in the Pali language, Chittanupassana. Because we fail to note these acts of consciousness, we tend to identify them with a person or individual. We tend to think that it is I who is imagining, or thinking, planning, knowing, or perceiving. We think that there is a person who, from childhood onwards, has been living and thinking. Actually, no such person exists. There are, instead, only these continuing and successive acts of consciousness. That is why we have to note these acts of consciousness and know them for what they are. That is why we have to note each and every act of consciousness as it arises and becomes evident. When so noted, it tends to disappear. We then go back to noting the rising and falling of the abdomen. When you have sat meditating for some period of time, sensations of stiffness and heat will arise in your body. These are to be noted carefully. Similarly with sensations of pain and tiredness. All of these sensations are called dukkha vedana, or the feeling of unsatisfactoriness. In noting them is vedana nupassana. Failure or omission to note these sensations makes you think, I am stiff, or I am feeling hot, or I am in pain. I was all right a moment ago. Now I am uneasy with these unpleasant sensations. The identification with these sensations with the ego is mistaken. There is really no I involved, only a succession of one new unpleasant sensation after another. It is just like a continuous succession of new electrical impulses that light up electric lamps. Every time unpleasant contacts are encountered in the body, unpleasant sensations arise one after another. These sensations should be carefully and intently noted, whether they are sensations of stiffness, of heat, or of pain. In the beginning of the yogi's meditational practice, these sensations may tend to increase and lead to a desire to change the posture. This desire should also be noted, after which time the yogi should go back to noting the sensations of stiffness, heat, etc. Patience leads to nibbana, as the saying goes. This saying is most relevant in meditational effort. One must be patient in meditation. If one shifts or changes one's posture too often, because one cannot be patient with the sensation of stiffness or heat that arises, good concentration or samadhi cannot develop. If samadhi cannot develop, insight cannot result, and there can be no attainment of magga, or the path that leads to nibbana, or pala, the fruit of that path, and nibbana. That is why patience is needed in meditation. It is patience mostly with unpleasant sensations in the body, like stiffness, sensations of heat and pain, and other sensations that are hard to bear, that one needs to carefully and patiently be with. That is, being mindful of them as they occur. One should not immediately give up one's meditation on the appearance of such sensations and change one's meditational posture. One should go on patiently, just noting as stiffness, stiffness, or hot, hot, etc. Moderate sensations of these kinds will disappear if one goes on noting them patiently. When concentration is good and strong, even intense sensations tend to disappear. One then reverts to noting the rising and falling of the abdomen. One will, of course, have to change one's posture if the sensations do not disappear, even after one has noted them for a long period of time, and if, on the other hand, they become unbearable. One should then begin noting as wishing to change, wishing to change. If the arm rises, notice rising, rising. If it moves, notice moving, moving. This change should be made gently and noted as rising, rising, moving, moving, and touching, touching. If the body sways, noted as swaying, swaying. If the foot rises, rising, rising. If it moves, notice moving, moving. If it drops, dropping, dropping. If there is no change, but only static rest, go back to noting the rising and falling of the abdomen. There must be no intermission in between, only continuity between a preceding act of noting and a succeeding one, between a preceding samadhi, or a state of concentration, and a succeeding state of concentration. Only then will there be successive and ascending stages of maturity in the meditator's state of insight. Magga and Palajnana, or the knowledge of the path and its fruition, are attained only when there is this kind of gathering momentum. The meditative process is like that of producing fire by energetically and unremittingly rubbing two sticks of wood together so as to attain the necessary intensity of heat, that is, when the flame arises. In the same way, the noting of Vipassana meditation should be continual and unremitting, without any resting interval between acts of noting whatever phenomena may arise. For instance, if a sensation of itchiness intervenes in the yogi desire to scratch because it is hard to bear, both the sensation and the desire to get rid of it should be noted, without immediately getting rid of the sensation by scratching. If one goes on perseveringly noting thus, the itchiness generally disappears, in which case one reverts to noting the rising and the falling of the abdomen. If the itchiness does not in fact disappear, one has, of course, to eliminate it by scratching. But first, the desire to do so should be noted carefully. All the movements involved in the process of eliminating the sensation should be noted, especially the touching, pulling, and pushing, and scratching movements, with an eventual reversion to noting the rising and falling of the abdomen. Every time you make a change of posture, you begin with noting your intention or desire to make the change, and go on to noting every movement closely, such as rising from the sitting posture, raising the arm, moving and stretching it. You should make the change at the same time as noting the movements involved. As your body sways forward, note it. As you rise, the body becomes light and rises. Concentrating your mind on this, you should gently note as rising, rising. The yogi should behave as if he were a weak invalid. People in normal health rise easily and quickly or abruptly. Not so with feeble invalids, who do so slowly and gently. The same is the case with people suffering from backache or some other illness, who rise gently, lest the back hurt and cause pain or some other form of difficulty. So also with meditating yogis, they have to take their changes of posture gradually and gently. Only then will mindfulness, concentration, and insight develop and mature gradually. Begin, therefore, with gentle and careful movements. When rising, the yogi must do so gently, like the person who is suffering from some form of illness, at the same time noting as rising. Not only this, though the eye sees, the yogi must act as if he or she does not actually see. Similarly with the ear that hears. While meditating, the yogi's concern is only to be aware and to note. What he sees and hears are not his concern. So whatever strange or striking things he may see or hear, he must behave as if he does not see or hear them, merely noting carefully. When making bodily movements, the yogi should do so gradually, as if he were a weak invalid, gently moving the arms and legs, bending or stretching them, bending down the head and bringing it up. All these movements should be made gently. When rising from the sitting posture, he should do so gradually, noting as rising, rising. When straightening up and standing, notice standing, standing. When looking here and there, notice looking, seeing. When walking, note the steps, whether they are taken with the right or the left foot. You must be aware of all the successive movements involved, from the raising of the foot to the dropping of it. Note each step taken, whether with the right foot or the left foot. This is the manner of noting when one walks fast. It will be enough if you note thus when walking fast and walking some distance. When walking slowly or doing the Chankama walk or the walking meditation, three movements should be noted in each step. When the foot is raised, when it is pushed forward and when it is dropped. Begin with noting the raising and dropping movements. One must be properly aware of the raising of the foot. Similarly, when the foot is dropped, one should be properly aware of the heavy falling of the foot. One must walk noting as raising, dropping with each step. This noting will become easier after about 2 days. Then go on to noting the three movements as described above, as raising, pushing forward, and dropping. In the beginning, it will suffice to note one or two movements only, thus, right step, left step, when walking fast, and raising, dropping, when walking slowly. If when walking thus, you want to sit down, note as wanting to sit down, wanting to sit down. When actually sitting down, note concentratedly the heavy falling of your body. When you are seated, note the movements involved in arranging your legs and arms. When there are no such movements, but just a stillness of the body, note the rising and falling of the abdomen. While noting thus a stiffness of your body and limbs, and sensation of heat in any part of your body arises, go on to note them carefully. Then back to rising and falling. While noting thus, and if a desire to lie down arises, note it in the movements of your legs and arms as you lie down. The raising of the arm, the moving of it, the resting of the elbow on the floor, the swaying of the body, the stretching of the legs, the gradual reclining of the body as one slowly prepares to lie down. All these movements should be noted. To note as you lie down thus is important. In the course of this movement, that is, while lying down, you can gain a distinctive knowledge, that is, magnana and palanyana, or the knowledge of the path and its fruition. When samadhi, or concentration of mind, and jnana, or insight, are developed and mature, the distinctive knowledge can come at any moment. It can come in a single bend of the arm or in a single stretch of the arm. Thus it was during the time of the Buddha, shortly after his passing away, when his personal attendant, 25 years, the Venerable Ananda, became a fully enlightened being, or an arhant. The Venerable Ananda was trying strenuously to attain arhantship overnight on the eve of the first Buddhist council. He was practicing the whole night the form of Vipassana meditation known as Kaya Gata Sati, noting his steps, right and left, raising, pushing forward, and dropping of the feet. Noting, happening by happening, the mental desire to walk and the physical movement involved in each step. Although this went on till it was nearly dawn, he had not yet succeeded in attaining arhantship. Realizing that he had practiced the walking meditation to excess and that in order to balance his concentration, or samadhi, and his effort, or virya, he decided that he should practice meditation in the lying posture for a while. He entered his chamber, he sat on the couch, and then began to lie down. While doing so and noting very carefully, lying, he attained full arhantship in an instant. The Venerable Ananda was only a sotapanna, that is, a stream winner, or one who has attained the first stage on the path to nibbana, before he thus lay himself down. From sotapannahood, he continued to meditate and reached sakadagamihood, or that condition of the once returner, or one who has attained the second stage of enlightenment. Next, anagamihood, or that state of the non-returner, or one who has attained the third stage of enlightenment, in arhantship, or the condition of the noble one who has attained the last and final stage on the path of enlightenment. Reaching these three successive stages of the higher path took only a little while. Just think of this example of the Venerable Ananda's attainment of arhantship. Such attainment can come at any moment, and it need not take very long. That is why the yogi should note with diligence all the time. He or she should not relax in their noting, thinking this little lapse should not matter very much. All movements involved in lying down and arranging the arms and legs should be carefully and as best as possible unremittingly noted. If there is no movement but only stillness of the body, go back to noting the rising and falling of the abdomen. Even when it is getting late and time for sleep, the yogi should not go to sleep yet, therefore dropping the awareness. A very serious and energetic meditator should attempt to practice mindfulness as he or she were foregoing sleep altogether. They should go on meditating till sleep actually occurs. If the meditation is good and somewhat mature, he will not fall asleep. Occasionally, on the other hand, however, drowsiness has the upper hand, and the yogi falls asleep. When he falls sleepy, he should notice sleepy, sleepy. If his eyelids droop, notice drooping, drooping. If they become heavy or leaden, heavy, heavy. If the eyes become tired, notice tired, tired. If they hurt, notice hurting, hurting. Noting in this manner, the drowsiness may pass and the eyes become clear again. The yogi should then note as clear, clear, and go on to note the rising and falling of the abdomen. However, perseveringly, the yogi may go on meditating. If real drowsiness intervenes, the yogi actually does fall asleep. It's not difficult to fall asleep. In fact, it's quite easy. If you meditate in the lying posture, you gradually become drowsy and eventually fall asleep. That is why the beginner in meditation should not meditate too long in the lying posture, or too much. He should meditate much more in the sitting and walking postures of the body. But as it grows late and becomes time for sleep, he or she should meditate in the lying posture, noting the rising and falling movements of the abdomen. They will then naturally and automatically fall asleep. The time the yogi is able to sleep is the resting time for the meditator. But for the really serious yogi, they should attempt to limit their sleeping time to about 4 hours. This is the midnight time permitted by the Buddha. 4 hours sleep is quite enough in most cases. If the beginner in meditation thinks that 4 hours sleep is actually not sufficient for health, they may extend it to 5 or 6 hours. 6 hours sleep is clearly enough for most people's health. When the yogi awakens, he or she should at once resume noting. The yogi who is really bent on attaining enlightenment, that is, magga and palanyana, should rest from meditational effort only when there is sleep. At other times, in his or her waking moments, they should be noting continually and without rest, unremittingly noting, carefully as possible. That is why, as soon as one awakens, they should note the awakening state of this mind as awakening, awakening. If they cannot yet make themselves aware of this, they should begin noting the rising and the falling of the abdomen. If they intend to get up from the bed, they should note as intending to get up, intending to get up. They should then go back to noting the changing movements they make as they arrange their arms and legs. When they raise the head, notice raising or rising. When he is seated, notice sitting, sitting. If when changes appear, or movements, or the arrangements of the legs and arms, noting all these movements very carefully is extremely important. If there are no such changes, but only a sitting quietly, they should revert to noting the rising and the falling movements of the abdomen. One should also note when one washes one's face and when one takes a bath, as the movements involved in these acts are rather quick, as many of them should be noted as possible. There are then acts of dressing, of tidying up the bed, of opening and closing the door. All these should also be noted as closely as possible. When the yogi has their meal and looks at the meal table, they should notice looking, seeing, looking, seeing. When they extend their arm towards the food, when the touching occurs, collecting and arranging the food, handling it and bringing it to the mouth, the bending of the head, and putting the morsel of food into the mouth, dropping the arm, raising the head again, all these movements should be noted as carefully and as continuously as possible. This way of noting is in accordance with the Burmese way of taking a meal. Those who are used to a fork and spoon or chopsticks should note the movements in an appropriate manner. When the meditator chews the food, they should notice chewing, chewing. When they come to know the taste of the food, they should notice knowing, knowing. As one relishes the food, that occurs, and swallows it. As the food goes down the throat, these movements should also be noted. All of the happenings, as continuously as possible, one should be aware of. This is how the yogi should note as they take one morsel after another, as one eats. As they take their soup, all the movements involved, such as extending of the arm, handling of the spoon, and scooping with it, and so on, all these should be noted. To note thus at mealtime is rather difficult, as there are so many things to observe and note. The beginning meditator is likely to miss several things which should be noted, but they should resolve to note all of them as best as possible. The yogi cannot, of course, help it if they overlook and miss something. But as samadhi or concentration becomes mature and strong, they will be able to note closely all of these happenings. Many things have been mentioned for the yogi to note or be aware of. But to summarize, there are only a few things to note. When walking fast, notice right step, left step, and as raising, dropping when walking slowly. When sitting quietly, just note the rising and falling of the abdomen. Note the same when you are lying. If there is nothing particularly to note, while noting thus, and if the mind wanders, note the acts of consciousness that arise, then back to the rising and the falling of the abdomen. Note also the sensations of stiffness, pain, and ache, and itchiness as they arise, then back to the rising and falling of the abdomen. Note also as they arise, the bending, stretching, and moving of the limbs, bending and raising of the head, swaying and straightening of the body, then back to rising and falling of the abdomen. As the yogi goes on noting thus, he will be able to note more and more of these happenings. In the beginning, as his mind wanders here and there, the yogi may miss noting many things, but he should not be disheartened. Every beginner in meditation encounters the same difficulty, but as he becomes more practiced, they become aware of every act of mind wandering till eventually the mind does not wander anymore. The mind is then riveted on the object of its attention. The act of mindfulness becomes almost simultaneous with the object of its attention, such as the rising and falling of the abdomen. In other words, the rising of the abdomen becomes concurrent with the act of noting it, and similarly with the falling of the abdomen. The physical object of attention and the mental act of noting are occurring as a pair. There is in this occurrence no person or individual involved. Only this physical object of attention and the mental act of noting occurring as a pair. The yogi will in time actually and personally experience these occurrences. While noting the rising and falling of the abdomen, they will come to distinguish the rising of the abdomen as a physical phenomenon and the mental act of noting of it as a psychical phenomenon. Similarly with the falling of the abdomen. Thus the yogi will distinctly come to realize the simultaneous occurrence in pair of these psychophysical phenomena. Thus, with every act of noting, the yogi will come to know for themselves clearly that there are only these material qualities which are the object of awareness or attention, and the mental quality that makes a note of it. This discriminating knowledge is called Namarupa Paricheda Jnana, the beginning of the Vipassana Jnanas. It is important to gain this knowledge correctly. This will be succeeded, as the meditator goes on, by the knowledge that distinguishes between the cause and its effect, which knowledge is called Pachaya Parigaha Jnana. As the yogis go on meditating, they will see for themselves that which arises passes away after a short while. Ordinary people assume that both the material and mental phenomena go on lasting throughout life, from youth till adulthood. In fact, that is not so. There is no phenomenon that lasts forever. All phenomena arise and pass away so rapidly that they do not even last for the twinkling of an eye. The yogi will come to know for themselves as he goes on noting carefully. They will then become convinced of the impermanency of all such phenomena. Such insight is called anicca nupassana jnana. This knowledge will be succeeded by dukkha nupassana jnana, that which realizes that all this impermanency is suffering. The meditator is also likely to encounter all kinds of hardship in the body, which is just an aggregate of suffering. This is also dukkha nupassana jnana. Next, the yogi will become convinced that all these psychophysical phenomena are occurring of their own accord, following nobody's will and subject to nobody's control. They constitute no individual or ego entity. This realization is anatta nupassana jnana. When, as they go on meditating, the meditator comes to realize firmly that all these phenomena are anicca, or impermanent, dukkha, or unsatisfying, and anatta, empty of a permanent self-entity, they then will come to reach the stage of attaining to nibbana. All the former Buddhas, Arhants, and Aryas realize nibbana following this very path. All meditating yogis should recognize that they themselves are now on this satipatthana path, in fulfillment of their wish for attainment of magajnana, the knowledge of the path, palajnana, or the knowledge of the fruition of the path, and nibbana dhamma, in following the ripening of their parami, the perfection of virtue. They should feel glad at this and at the prospect of experiencing the noble kind of samadhi, or tranquility of mind brought about by concentration, and jnana, or the supermundane knowledge or wisdom experienced by the Buddhas, Arhants, and Aryas, in which they themselves have never experienced before. It will not be long before they will experience for themselves this magajnana, palajnana, and nibbana dhamma experienced by the Buddhas, Arhants, and Aryas. It's actually quite possible that these particular states of mind could be experienced in the space of a month or of 20 or 15 days of their meditational practice. Those whose parami is exceptional may experience these dhammas even within 7 days. The yogi should therefore rest content in the faith that they will attain these dhammas in the time specified above, that they will be freed of sakya ditti, or the belief in the ego or permanent self-entity, and vichikicca, or doubt, or uncertainty, and saved from the danger of rebirth in the lower worlds of suffering. They should go on with their meditational practice with this type of confidence and faith. May you all be able to practice meditation well and quickly attain that nibbana which the Buddhas, Arhants, and Aryas have experienced.